Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at the direct blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com, or you are in the iTunes, or in iTunes, and you can enter Warman Kickfighting Show or enter Lord Gaul into the iTunes search engine, and my podcast pops right up. iTunes is by far the most efficient way to get it. That way, it'll just upload to you, you know, once a week when it pops up and so on. So I made you guys a promise that I was going to come back, do two episodes this week. A lot of kickboxing going on. I had been failing you in the month of September and October because I was super busy. But I'm really going to make sure that I get these episodes out because I've got a really busy November coming up too. So I wanted to jump into a lot of the action. I've been failing you guys in the stadiums, and I know I got some big-time stadium fans, and I had not been getting to the stadium fights as much, but I'm going to go ahead and give you guys a solid breakdown. I think I'm going to do about eight fights, so I'll just go ahead and give you guys time. First and foremost, I got I don't know if you guys heard my phone went off in the background. First and foremost, I've got to tell you to go to Muay Thais, M-U-A-Y. T-I-E-S, and it is on YouTube. Go ahead and enter that into your YouTube search engine, or just put in any major Thai fighter, and the gentleman who uploads the videos to Muay Thai does a really good job. I always try to do my best to give him his due because he's been huge for me getting the time to really break down a lot of the elite stadium fights. I really want to do my best to get people interested in it. I want to do my best for people to hear about these elite athletes that are competing at the highest level and going against really tough competition, people who made it their lives since they were, you know, between the ages of 8 and 13, and they really went after it full. I want people to hear their stories, be moved by the level of competition, and then really get a great knowledge of some of the intricacies of, you know, Muay Thai, because the European version of it's a lot different than, well, I won't say a lot different, but it's significantly different than what you would see in the stadiums. The boxing is scored a lot higher in the international scene. The total offense is scored, whereas in the Thai stadiums, they usually go the most significant strike, and then they, of course, reward the most difficult strike. So, for example, a body kick is seen as more effective or as a higher score than a low kick, because a low kick is just a simple representation of, okay, this is a guy who is going to be able to score at a limb that can be checked, but for the most part, you can get to it rather easy. But if you try to score a body kick against the guy, it can be caught, it can be checked. They see that as the more difficult score. So that's why you see a lot of ties with that awesome body kick, because that's the one that's going to give them the big score. It can also knock people off balance. It can also get to the body and clean. You'll sometimes see people fire three or four, you know, body kicks back and forth at each other, and almost all of them get caught because it shows the difficulty of really landing that strike significantly. So if you can fire that in, they're really going to score it high. That is something that is a product of the, you know, the stadium style of fighting. You're going to see a lot more clinch in the stadium style fighting. All that stuff comes into play. So I just wanted to give you guys a good breakdown of it. Let's go ahead and revisit the stadium fights as we speak. I'm going to go ahead and pick them at random. If you just joined it, if you're at the subscribed page, you can go to home and then you can go to videos and you'll see which videos I'm talking about. But I'll do my best to spell these out before I break them down. First of all, I'm going to go ahead and start off with on what would be the 9th of September is when this fight happened, but it was uploaded just recently, just the other day. And we are going to talk about Wanchai, W-A-N-C-H-A-I versus Enchanai. And in this battle, or in this particular fight, it's interesting because I really thought that for portions of it, Enchanai was really fighting this, you know, taking the fight, and he was going in slow motion. Just everything, he could see it. His clinch was really good from a distance. He was able to score with knees and keep his, you know, use his long arms because he was a taller man. And sometimes you'll hear this, I don't know if it originated as an expression or if it is the difficulty that people are having with taller, you know, fighters getting victories over smaller fighters. But there's been a saying that I've heard in Thailand, and I've heard in, you know, the States or in Europe, of people saying, referring to how they score in Thailand, they say the taller man always wins. That's what the term is. Now, when I first heard it, I thought it was referring to height. But the more I watch fights, I'm wondering, and I could still be wrong, if that term meant for What I believe is the correct way of how they score fights in Thailand is fight dictation. Do they mean the person who is standing taller, who has the most significant strikes, who moves the other person, like in terms of the image of it, not so much who's taller than, you know, who's the tallest physically of the two guys, because if that's the case, then why would a shorter person ever fight a taller person if that's how it's scored? Why would a Sanchai ever exist because he's never been the tallest guy in his fights? So when you look at this, Ench and I did a great job of being just that, the taller guy, really scoring in the clinch. Short elbows over the top, really working in the grapple, doing a good job of turning here and there, but really just scoring knees and stifling Wen Chai's offense. Then all of a sudden, come the fourth round, Wen Chai starts to get the body kicks going, starts to let them go, just you know, some violent kicks, significant enough to score and get him back in the fight, despite the fact that I thought in the early portion of the fight, I thought it was clear that Ench and I was just, you know, dominating, keeping it at a distance. He'd take a shot here and there, but he just kept walking forward. And then after we had this exchange, we had something that a lot of people are critical of in Thailand. They are very critical of how they can take the fifth round off. And basically, if you believe you are up on the cards, there's a really good chance that you, and culturally, you don't have to do much more work. And there's this cultural understanding that, all right, the other person, we both fight, we both send money home to our family. I am up on the cards. There's no reason for me to, you know, push the advantage and try to score a KO here. The other guy has to feed his family, so I'll go ahead and call it. So they'll usually touch gloves, and then they'll start dancing around, and they'll let the round go out. Or if it's super close, sometimes they will put it in the hands of the judges in the corner. Like, a fighter will look over to his corner will be like, stop fighting. And he'll start playing backwards, and he'll let the cards, you know, dictate what happened in the fight. And more times than not, they are right. If you believe you're up going into the fifth round, and you've, you know, scored something solid early in that first minute, you can go ahead and go on cruise control, and you probably have the fight because you won the majority of the action in rounds 3 and 4, and those are the big scoring rounds. But in this case, it seemed like both fighters had that idea, and they did it very, very early in the fifth round. So most of the fifth round is just them dancing and staring at each other for 2 minutes. At one period of time, the ref, who seemed to understand that the fight was closer, called them to the middle and called them back to action. Both guys looked over to the corner. Both corners agreed, don't do anything. End result, they called it a draw. And it's crazy because I thought that, in particular because if you include the rounds 1 and 2 work, Ench and I did think that he had done enough in the early portion of the fight. But when you talk about the significant strikes, some of those, you know, kicks that were smashed in from Wen Chai definitely did a great job of scoring for him. So this fight was called a draw, and no tears shed for either guy, because if it was close in the fifth round and both of their corners could have said, let's go ahead and do the work and try to secure this, both corners worried about being perceived as the guy who was down, and then they just went ahead and took the fight off, and they got a draw out of it. So disappointing there in the fifth round. Would have liked to see them go for it for at least a minute. At least a minute, I'd like to see them go for it and then have somebody decide to take the round off. Next fight on the card I want to talk about is Wurichai. It is as he takes on Pit Namgan, and I'm going to go ahead and spell that out for you. Wirachai, and he takes on Pet Namgam, which is Petnamgam. And go ahead and, like, you know, put these into your YouTube search engines. That's how these fights pop up. Or, like I said before, the easiest way is just to simply go into the, you know, subscribe to Muay Thais, and that'll give you your best opportunity to see these. I'll go ahead and break it down. The thing that I most got from this fight, and Pet Nam Gam did a good job of, you know, getting separation and getting his hands raised towards the end of the fight. He was a little bit slicker, did some good stuff with the body kicks. But the reason why I really wanted to bring up this fight is it shows you some of the beauty that happens when the Thai kick is performed absolutely perfect. And even when these guys were missing, in particular in the second and third round, some of the kicks they were throwing were just, they were just so technically perfect. And whether they missed or whether they scored, if you just, in particular Wirachai, if you watch some of the way his kicks came in, the way he brought the knee high when he came back, it just looked like a beautiful, beautiful kick. So you hear about the Thai kick all the time, you see it, you know, taught. It's so cool when you see it performed perfectly so many times. Now, they got sloppy a little bit here. Some period of times, they were trying to slide out of the way and make each other miss, and some kicks were missing. Periods of time, they were sloppy in terms of they were kicking air. But when they really, you know, I mean, if you really focus on just how the kick is delivered, this is your best opportunity to see it at its height. It really, really looked good coming from these guys, and they developed, or they delivered what I thought some very, very technical strikes. And I really think that people should slow it down. I know you're listening to your coaches. I know you're breaking the tie. The tie kick down is as slow and as perfect as you possibly can. I know that that's been preached to a lot of places, but it is very, very important that people see the perfect technique not just happen on the pads, not just happen from your coach. Watch it happen in a fight, and it doesn't always happen in the fights, especially in the European, I'll say the Western world. You'll see it in America. You'll see it in Europe, where you'll see people who they might score a good percentage of their kicks technical, but it usually wanes over time, and they're just kind of picking the leg up. Also, you're going to see so many different variations of a switch kick. If you go all over the world, whether you look at MMA, kickboxing, Muay Thai, the switch kick, the variations of it, a lot of times they don't switch stance full and then fire the kick. Some people just have a short one where they just kind of get the toe close or bring the toe back to your plant leg or what would be your rear leg, and then they could snap it up without even having to switch stances. I've seen a lot of different variations. Sometimes you just slow it down and watch the Thai guys do it. Watch them do it. And some of them play with those little variations, but for the most part, you're going to see a full switch and powerful blow that shows you the significance of the strike. So go ahead, give this fight a shot, and you'll really get a good idea of what that kick looks like when it's super, super technical. Next fight I want to talk about is, and it was a fun one for me because it showed a lot of the different elements, but Chajarone, which is spelled Chajaroen, as he gets the victory in a, you know, what I thought was very, you know, entertaining affair over Yadpan Amrung, Yodpanomrung. And I thought that the difference in this fight, and, you know, Yepen Nemrong did a good job of really having some moments where he put on some pretty entertaining moments of offense. Like, I won't take that away from him at all. I thought that he did some good stuff. But I thought that the difference in the fourth round was Chajarone and his ability to score the step up, the walking step up knee. Kind of he added a march to it. And some people ask me about the technical aspects sometimes about breaking some of these fights down. And basically what you'll see from Chajarone is he had this moment where he would hands high and start like a little walk, which is sometimes called a march, to kind of put himself into position. He'd dictate it from different reins, and the moment he was close, he would fire a knee in, and then he'd start the grapple. So he'd start the grapple off with, I'm going to walk into the knee, stay high, defensively sound in case hands come and so on, and the moment I engage, I'm going to score the knee before I go into the grapple. And one time, in the fourth round in particular, I think it was the most significant moment of the fight, he scored a really well-timed left knee off the tie march into the clinch, and at that exact same time, Yadpan Nemrong was throwing a kick, and it knocked him off balance, and you could, like, there's a response from the crowd. How rare is it that you would see somebody do a walking step-up knee that would disrupt someone's kick? Usually, you're in the, you know, in close, and they'll just start to grapple right back. Rarely do you see them kind of stumble back and have to regain their footing. It was a really, really good score. I really liked the performance from Chajarone, and I want to see more of him. I want to see more of him compete. It was a lot of fun, and I enjoyed that battle. Going to go ahead and go to probably of the fights that I'm going to break down, my favorite of the, you know, complete performance. We had Yad Asawin. This fight took place on October 2nd in New Lumpini. Yad Asawin, Yod-Asawin versus Thepnimit, Thepnimit. And Thepnimit had one of my favorite performances as far as being complete. This fight is showed the entire fight's shown. So if you get, you know, like I said, if you go ahead and go to subscribe to Muay Thai, and if you look at this fight full and you watch Thepnimit, it will come in as 15 minutes and 33 seconds. So you know you've got a long fight. It's going to show the whole fight. First of all, he starts off with this awesome, you know, 1-2 low kick game to the back leg. To the rear leg attacks and the low kick, I really am a big fan of them because your leg's not as conditioned back there, and most people aren't used to taking those shots. And in the early portions of the rounds, when the gamblers are still getting going and the guys are kind of filling each other out, he is investing powerful leg, you know, low kicks back there. So by the end of second round, before we even get into the higher scoring rounds, Yad Aswin is hurt. He's hurt by the legs and by the low kicks. Thep Nemet just kind of stayed at that pace, never just stayed with strong 1-2, literally 1-2 power leg, jab jab power leg, and he kept attacking that back leg. Soon the back leg was in trouble, and the one thing I do want to give Yad Aswin credit for was he started to get to check up when he realized it was getting in bad shape, and he did a good job of really checking some kicks solid, which just shows you how tough that Nemit's shins are, because he just kept cracking away. He didn't care. But then you go into the third round, and he decided to switch it up a little bit. All of a sudden, he start again fighting pretty much in slow motion. Didn't really, have to throw a million strikes. Just kind of pacing in and finding the right selective shots. And then he started to work in the clinch. As they engaged, not only was he able to score the knees, but he scored a lot of elbows. Thep Nemet did a good job of bringing the elbows right over the guard. As soon as they got into the grapple, he would trap the extended arm with his right hand. He'd go ahead and get his left hand in the crook of the elbow there on the inside, and then he'd fire right over the top. Sometimes he'd touch and fire. Sometimes he would time it as he knew Yad Aswin was looking to go for the grapple. And again, he never extended himself. He never went crazy. There was a couple times where Yad Aswin did a good job of at least trying to compete, throw the elbows back. Thep Nemet either blocked him with his guard or slipped him and went right back to work. Back to work with the knees, back to work with his distance striking, back to work with that complete performance that he was putting together with the clinch, not just scoring the knees, but the elbows as well. And then going to it, as I look at that performance, there was a moment where, if I'm remembering this correctly, Yad Aswin scored a sweep basically to the, because they were opposite stance. He scored a sweep he caught Thep Nemet kicking, and the moment Thep Nemet got back up, he scored the exact same sweep. Like he scored, he attacked the plant leg while Yad Aswin was kicking. And that to me is what I describe to my students as taking it off the board. Anytime you score the same strike, it marks as even in a judge's mind. So if you wanted to give Yad Aswin credit for that moment where he was able to score to that inside leg while the, Thep Nemet was kicking, and he falls on his back, and you're like, okay, give him the score for the dictated score. But then Thep Nemet gets right back up, and he gets the exact same score and takes it off the board. That was really, really slick stuff by him. Going to round four, he started mixing up the hands, and he did a combination where he did, I think, 1-2-3 body kick. And I'm like, that is something that you rarely see, combination with the hands to the body kick. It's usually I'm going hands, or I'm going stronger with my kicks, and maybe one shot in a kick. But when you see that flow of hands that follows with the big-time body kick, doesn't happen as much. It happens, but doesn't happen as much in some of the stadium fights. And I thought that Thep Nemet put on a really good performance. So if you are one of those coaches out there and you're listening to this, and you're one of the coaches that really like to hurt people and attack different areas, in kickboxing, it's very important that you pretty much stay with the same area. If you get a guy hurt in the low kicks, especially in a 3-round fight, you want to see that guy slowed, and that's what's going to get you get you up on the cards late in the fight. It's very important that you stay there. But sometimes, because of the way that they score the diverse strikes, you'll see people who play with full rules Muay Thai, and they want to start hurting one area and then start hurting another area. If you are that kind of coach and if you're that kind of fighter, really watch Thep Nemet's performance here, because he started off really going after that back leg of, he used his left leg to attack the back rear leg of Yad Aswin. Then he starts winning a clinch with knees. Then he starts adding the elbows. Then he scores a sweep. Then he starts going combinations to the leg kicks or to the body kicks. And he really put together a complete performance. So definitely check out Thep Nemet's performance. Going to go ahead and talk about a couple of stoppages. Jamad versus Ken Cart was very interesting because, first of all, they start off, kind of slow. As soon as the video starts, they kind of touch gloves, kind of slow, and then Ken Cart does a great job of firing a high kick that gets right over Jamad's, guard and drops him. So right away, we're still first round, he scores something significant. And Jamad gets up, and Ken Cart, instead of, looking to go for the kill, instead of going ahead and pushing the pace and scoring something big, which is something that I saw when I was in Thailand as well. I've seen guys score big shots in the first round where people are pretty much out on their feet, and then they just go ahead and wait till round two, whether it's done for betting or whether it's done because it's the early rounds and you don't look for that KO. I didn't see anything in these guys that kind of, reminded me of a Pornsenai type, time to get a guy out of there type moment. The moment Ken Cart scored it, He went ahead and he relaxed and he went back to playing the game. And Jim Hahn had a moment where he smiled at him. And I'm like, all right, that could come back to bite you. Not knowing that it would come back to bite him. In my mind, I was just thinking that, okay, Ken Carter's going to go ahead and take this into the next round and knock him out there. But I was very wrong. In that next round, Jim Hahn had a series where he threw some hands and he followed it with a left kick to the body. And after the left kick came up, he threw a left hand. So he hid his strike, his powerful strike of a left hand with a flurry of hands in front of it and then a kick. And then he lunged forward to fire the left hand while Ken Carter was back to the rope. Landed clean, knocked him out. Crowd went crazy. His, you know, Jamal put on a little dance because, I mean, he pretty much could have been gone. And anytime you come back from being dropped, the crowd loves you. They love it when you get up and you show that kind of heart. So shout out to Jamal Hod. Good victory there. JOMHOD, Ken Cart, KENGKART. Check that fight out. Another KO I'm going to talk about is Big Bang. Big Bang, simply BIGBANK, as he gets a, you know, stoppage victory over Deb Tawada, DABTEWADA. The reason why I bring this fight up, it was just a fun fight in general, but man, you see it happen in the younger kids with the younger fighters. You will see opportunities where guys score knees and someone's stuck, and if you're stuck in a position or you can't stop something, a ref will come in and stop the fight. It's the main reason why kids fights can happen in Thailand. If they were just killing each other and nobody was doing anything, that'd be one thing. But usually, and I'm telling you, almost always, you're going to see some sort of situation where someone comes in and they're watching the action, and if you can't stop like a body kick, you know, you can't stop a body kick, they'll say, all right, you can't stop this body kick. You can't be in there. We'll go ahead and stop it. The most common way this happens in the clinch. And in the clinch, whenever you see somebody who's really struggling to get out of, you know, offensive whatever, you know, if you see somebody that's kind of struggling to get out of, you know, whether it's they can't break your arms, they can't turn you, whether they can't pummel, whatever the reason is, you're stuck in a clinch. If someone can get there and keep having offensive success, the ref will usually step in and break it up. It's rare that this happens in the stadiums. It's rare that you're going to see this in New Lumpini. It's rare that you're going to see this in the Rogers Stadium. It's very, very rare. But it happened here. And Big Bang had a moment where early he got to, like, the full clinch. Sometimes you hear, you know, on UFC, like a Joe Rogan, they'll use the term the full plum. And I've said it on this podcast before. It's very, very rare that you're going to see somebody in that position in high-level Muay Thai. They're usually going to have one hand around the neck, in the collarbone, kind of as control there. And the other hand's going to be in the turn of the arm, of the elbow, or fighting in the bicep. It's usually they want to be there so that they don't neutralize, because they want to know where your arms are. They want to be able to beat the arms. So usually they kind of stay in that position. That's more common. If you can have a guy who gets into a full clinch situation or something close to it and they have a lot of success, man, if you can't get out of that spot, the ref's going to have to come in and make a decision, and that's what happened in this fight. Really had to step up, really had to come in and say, all right, you took like three or four bad ones in the previous round. He continues to get you in that position. Big Bank was able to get the win. It really was a interesting fight because it makes me doubt someone's level when that happens, but in truth, it was just high-level stuff by Big Bank, and he gets the win. The last fight I'm going to talk about of these fights, and it's just it's interesting because it's one of those things where I've been paying attention to him for a while, and now he's moving up in weight, so I've been curious to see how it goes. Jodvica, who was once the super kid of a couple years ago, who had that great streak where he's beating everybody, all the elite guys, and you know he was just kind of all the talk. Like, I mean, just he was on a roll, won like seven fights in a row, beating like Sigdam beating, you know, Pechbuchu, and that, you know, Pechbuchu ended up getting the victories back. But man, there was a while where he was like, it looked like it was going to be clear that this guy was going to be the fight of the year. Jodvica had some gym troubles, switched gyms. Now he's bigger in weight, fighting at 141. And 141, it's different now. Like, I'm telling you, when I fell in love with this sport in the 2000s, 141 was a pretty legit division. Like, you paid attention to it. It was something that you wanted to know who that champion was. And you look at some of the guys who ended up fighting international and getting bigger. They started off, you know, as 141 champions, and then they went on to, you know, compete internationally at 54 or at 47, 147 pounds. Like, it just, they moved on. They moved on to fight international guys because the rest of the world doesn't have a lot of guys who compete at 126 pounds in Muay Thai. You know, you got your Andy Housens and, you know, you got your Damien Trainers that are like, you know, under 130 pounds. But for the most part, you're looking at guys who are, you know, 60 kgs plus, and it's even easier at 65 kgs to find international opportunities. So when someone moves up to 41 kgs, I'm usually really, really conscious, or 141 pounds, I'm usually really, really conscious of what's coming from them moving forward. So Jodvisha, who, you know, he's known for beating people. You know, I remember I watched a fight where, when he's coming up 16, 17 years old, and he beats a guy who's a body kicker with body kicks. And then he beats Pechbuchu in the clinch. And, like, he's just kind of winning the fight wherever you want to fight. Now that he's bigger, I felt like he had to be smart, had to make wiser decisions, and there's things that he can't get away with. And one of the things that he used to be really, really good at is he did this kind of sort of, when he's in a full clinch, he'll do almost what can only be described as a headlock, and he'll get the guy down, and he'll still be able to get his opposite knee up, or the knee that's away from the headlock, and he'll be able to score that some, and then short elbows. And they're not the greatest scores in the world, but they completely shut down and neutralize the opponent, because the opponent can't really pummel in that situation when someone's got you there. The best they can do is try to push him off under his armpit, and usually that's not enough. So I really credit him for all of the offensive success that, you know, he was having. And as he moved up in weight, I was like, it's going to be tougher for him to sustain that. First thing I paid attention to, of course, is his body. And you can see that he's bigger. Now, he was 16, 17 years old when he's fighting at 130, 134. So it makes sense that as he goes to 18, 19, he get bigger. So he looked decently strong. And his clinch, the pummeling, that was the thing that was the difference. I thought he started off this fight slow, trying to play a body kick and distant game. And I don't know if I ever felt like he got into his flow. In fact, I thought him and Sen Saturn were doing the same thing of playing at a distance. I'll go ahead and break this down for you guys. Spelling Yodvisha, Yodvisha, and then Sen Saturn, literally Sen Saturn. Simple breakdown, simple spelling for that name. And I thought that Sen Saturn and Yodvisha kind of were both trying to find range and didn't look the greatest at doing it. But the moment they got in the clinch, Yodvisha is a very active pummeler. If you want to learn something about pummeling, you got to watch Yodvisha, because he just doesn't stay in certain places long. He makes sure he fights the arm. He makes sure he pops his head up. Like, he makes sure that he continues to be aggressive. But this fight in particular, I thought he did a really good job of finding elbows while playing that game. While in the grapple, while fighting the arms, I thought he did a good job of finding elbows. He's always been good at knees. He's always been good at getting into body locks and neutralizing opponents. But I always thought that some of the elbows that he tried to score were forced when he fought in the smaller weight. I thought that these ones came across clean. There was space to them. I thought he did a really, really good job. And I thought that this was a satisfactory win for me. At 141 pounds, of course, I start to think, what can you do? Where can you go? The elites out there, France bringing in elite guys, England, of course, bringing in elite guys because of the Kyle brand. I'm excited to know what comes from him in future. He really is a entertaining fighter. He's a very talented dude, and he's just pushing himself. Like, he's pushing himself to get better all the time. And despite the fact that he had that small kind of, you know, weird moments where, you know, and it gets everybody in Thailand's getting better, everybody in Thailand's training all the time. What I meant by pushing himself is he's pushing himself into a position where if he gets the right management, I could see him getting, you know, at minimum a Kun Lun opportunity. But we want to see him fighting international because it means more of the world get to see this talent. There's a reason why Sanchai is starting to get all these YouTube videos and he's starting to get all this international respect. It's because people have fallen in love with the idea of how skilled these guys are, and they appreciate it more when they watch them compete. So that's why I'm hoping more international opportunities. That will break down my stadium breakdown for this portion of the show. Like I said, I promise you guys I would do more stadium stuff. And I think at least once a month, minimum, I can sit down and focus on 8 or 9 fights and give you as in-depth a breakdown as I can. I'm going to go ahead and move into more full rules Muay Thai, but this time we're going to be in the States. We're going to go ahead and talk about the Lion Fight 25 card that's going down tomorrow night. I'm recording this on a Thursday here in Texas, USA. And basically, I'll go ahead and go through the fight card as I know it. I wasn't 100% certain if they found a fight for Marvin Matarigia. I'm not that he is the Blue Ocean product. He's very, very talented. I don't know 100% if they settled on his opponent, but I'll go ahead and break down the other fights as I know them. Lauren Rojos gets a fight with Caitlin Young. Caitlin Young actually performed very well in Iowa. Iowa is a amateur Muay Thai tournament that they have every year, and they did this one, what? I want to say they did this tournament, the one that she participated in, must have been 8-9 years ago now. It's been a while. I can't think of the exact one that she was in, but she did well in that, so she's always had Muay Thai skill, and when she went into MMA, she was able to, you know, really, you know, have a lot of success. She got a victory over Misha Tate, and I think it's all because she came with such offensive aggressiveness. Like, she was a very, very skilled fighter, and I'd seen her fight amateur in Minnesota because that's where I'm from originally, and it was cool that she got this opportunity because she has the skill, but in MMA it seemed like over a period of time she started to fade physically and so on, like she started to get tired. But man, she can fight Muay Thai, and maybe the 3 minutes are better suited for her, and I'm curious to see how she does. I'm not sure how much cutting the 135 affects her, but I know that she's definitely good enough to get a win here over Lauren Rojas. Moving on to the next fight, Mike Lemaire gets a fight with Jake Post. Lemaire fighting as much as possible is always a good thing. As we have mentioned him on the show many times before. He fought in Glory, had the opportunity to he was going to get pushed because they thought that he was a good U.S. name at 187 pounds. And then he ran into Wayne Barrett. And then Wayne Barrett was able to get the victory there by stoppage. And then Barrett went on to have a pretty good career and is still moving and still on Glory cards on a regular basis. Mike Lemaire gets an opportunity to fight in Glory here and there. But this Lion Fight contract where he can fight full rules Muay Thai, which is what he says is his preference and what he's used to, it at minimum gives him two organizations that focus on giving him fights. And it's really hard for people in the States to get those kind of opportunities. I think this is his third fight, maybe second or third fight for Lion Fight. And I think that he's fought for Glory twice. So, this past year, if he could keep that type of a schedule, you know, where he just gets 5-6 fights between these organizations, you're doing all right. If you get 6 fights in a year, you're doing pretty good as a kickboxer. You know, like you're doing pretty good as a kick fighter in terms of full rules Muay Thai and kickboxing opportunities. So I think Mike Lemaire gets the victory here. Romeo Danza against Anthony Castorajan, 118 pounds, difficult to find guys. I thought Romeo Danza was, definitely down, and I think most people did in his last fight. I want to say that was Stephen Melidi. It eludes me right now as I'm kind of recording. Please don't hate me. I know someone's going to email me and be like, no, you got the wrong name. But no, it's, I believe when Romeo Danza, actually, you know what? It was Dan McGowan. It just came back to me. 19-year-old Dan McGowan. All right, cool. I was going to drive myself crazy if I couldn't remember that name. Dan McGowan was the one that Romeo Danza was in the tough fight with. And again, McGowan was doing fantastic, was doing great. And then one elbow scores and a Danza, gets separation on the cards. By separation on the cards, no need for them because the cut split McGowan's lip and that gave him the opportunity to get the victory. And he didn't feel like when Romeo Danza got that win, nothing in his movements suggested that he was happy with that performance. I think he truly desired to come out and have effective offense throughout. And really, that one strike was his lone moment for the fight. So I look at that and I look back on, what was accomplished in that fight. And I think that he wants to come out and be much more offensively effective this time. He just had such a big gap in between his fights because it's tough to find fights at 118 pounds. Not to mention life gets in the way. So we'll see what comes of this performance between him and Anthony Castorajan, who they've used on the promotion several times before. I think it should be a good one. So we'll see, and it should be a lot of fun. Jason Andrade goes against Ming Freeman, and Jason Andrade has had some weird things happen on the cards. He's been in a lot of close fights. He's an entertaining guy to watch, and he is, I know they want to use him more, and I think they want to give him more opportunities. He's another guy that you might want to consider bringing Dan McGowan in for. He's losing some of these close. I think he's lost maybe 3 or 4 in a row, and he could have, you can make the argument that in those 3 losses that he could have, could have gone either way. He could have gotten the victory, but he will be in another matchup. I lean for him to beat Ming Freeman, but it should be close. I'll be interested to see what comes from this battle. We get to the main event, and these are the ones, the fights that I mentioned before have athletes here and there that could have international resumes down the road to pay attention to. these guys at the top, these four fighters at the top, are the ones that are international names who are fighting high level, and they're the most high level card fighters in the card. Starts off with Irina Bars. She takes on Martina Jindrova, and it's so funny that once upon a time, Irina Bars is, you know, not scheduled to fight Christine Cyborg Santos, and it's supposed to be Martina Jindrova's fight. Like, that is who they originally had scheduled. And all of a sudden, you know, for whatever reason, injury and whatnot, she was out of the fight. Martina Jindrova was out of the fight, and they brought in Irina Bars. The moment they did that, I remember I called in advance, Irina Bars is going to beat Christine Santos Cyborg. Like, I knew it was going to happen as a fact. She's very, very talented. And she performed absolutely wonderful in that fight. Martina Jindrova is a skilled Muay Thai fighter who's been around for a long time. Fought Julie Kitchen. She's fought some high-level girls. If she can come in with an active clinch, she's got a good chance to beat Jirina. Because that is the Achilles heel for Jirina. Is as tall as she is, they don't work the clinch where she's from. That's just not a focus for their team. They are more focused on effective offense, combinations, and low kicks. Like, that is what they bring to the table. And Irina, in space, she's got good movements. Her low kick game will be on point. If Martina can't get a hold of her, she can't get a clinch for at least three of the five rounds, Irina Bars is going to win a clear decision because she's a better kickboxer in space. But if Martina can close the distance and get a clinch, she's got a good opportunity, because Jirina, she doesn't have a pummel, she doesn't fight the arms, she doesn't pop the head up, she just kind of pushes them into the ropes, and sometimes not even that, sometimes she just waits for the ref to break it up. So that is, if you're going to take advantage of anything, you got to take advantage of that. You take that away, Jirina Bars is awesome in space. Awesome kickboxer. She'll be a lot of fun to watch. I have Jirina Bars retaining her title and moving forward. Last fight in the card, Jianwei Par. They bring him over from Australia, bring him over after a, you know, long break. He usually only fights on his promotion where he does the cage Muay Thai with the MMA gloves. He takes in Cosmo Alexander for the third time. For those who didn't see the first two fights, the first fight is Jianwei Par winning a decision in five rounds. He just throws more offense. And Cosmo, as great as Cosmo is, Cosmo has always struggled to throw a lot of offense. He just doesn't do it. He is selective about his shots. He picks where he wants to be offensive. He just kind of waits things out a little bit too much and explodes into big offense when he gets the opportunity. In the clinch, Cosmo's better than Jianwei Par in the clinch. Not even close. Jianwei Par has never been a great clinch fighter. But because Jianwei Par is going to throw offense in the clinch, he's going to throw effective knees, he's going to keep working in the clinch, he is going to get the points, whereas Cosmo is going to be waiting it out, looking for a certain strike, and that usually works against him. I think that Cosmo Alexander has the tools to beat Jianwei Par. He's definitely good enough to do it. The killer for him is, man, he doesn't throw enough offense, and that's what's got to happen. He's got to let those hands go. He's got to, even if he just came out hook low kick for a long time, he'd have success. Because Jianwei Par has no problem throwing. Jianwei Par doesn't even care if he misses. He'll just come and just throw like 70 punches. He's older, so they don't come as quickly as they used to. But he's going to keep throwing. I got Jianwei Par winning this fight just because I think he's going to throw more offense, and I think it's going to be easier to go for him in the cards at the end of it. Cosmo has a great opportunity, great chance to win this fight. No question about it. But as I break it down in my mind, I just can't see him scoring enough to keep Jianwei Par at bay. I got Jianwei Par winning the inaugural lion fight. What is it? It's at 167. They call it super welterweight title. It's tough keeping up with their titles. They got too many titles. I don't know what Yosinclai's belt is, but they got a lot of titles there. But it'll be fun to have Jianwei Par get it, because Jianwei Par coming to the States twice a year and fighting would be really, really cool. So I'm hoping they use him at least twice a year. I am going to go ahead and go with two more. I'll bring up a couple more results, some simple results that have been sitting out there. Talk about some old K1 guys. Archer Kachinko gets a clear victory over Cedric Tosh. And Tosh of, for people who don't know now, Archer Kachinko is now based out of Spain. And they got a little small documentary on him, and it talks about how he really focused on fighting and improving his career. And when he went out to Holland, He didn't like it as much because him and his girlfriend, then now wife, they now have a child. And he said that when he was out there, he's focused on the sport, but he didn't like Holland as much. And he says that he likes Spain a lot, and I think weather has a lot to do with it. But he's found a good, a stable of team and a promotion that's going to give him regular fights. He came out, scored well with the boxing. It's weird because Cedric Tosh, the crowd would cheer every time he was able to return with an inside leg kick, which he scored well against Artur Kashenko. The only problem is Artur Kashenko would throw like 5-6 combos, hands, and then follow with a low kick. And then right in the very end of it, Tosh would score an inside leg. So if you're a judge, who are you going to give it to? The guy who threw 6 shots and scored 4 or 5, or the guy who threw 1 shot? And I think that was kind of the killer for Cedric Tosh, who stood strong. His guard was actually pretty good because Kashenko did a great job putting strong combinations upstairs. But the skill, as fights go longer, that's when you really get the understanding of who the best fighters in the world. Artur Kashenko started to land much more significantly. Combinations, big strong rips with his right hook to the body, left hook to the body. He looped his right hand upstairs as well. He scored strong in combinations throughout. Like, he really did a great job of that. And I thought, as we move forward on the card, as we got to the end of the fight, as we got to the portion of, all right, who's still there, when you get to the second, third round, it's clear at that point that every once in a while, even though, we had some moments where Kashenko would just kind of go backwards and take moments of the fight off, it was clear that all we could get from Cedric Tosh was for him to kind of walk after him. And he just didn't have it. He didn't have the ability. He worked hard, but he just wasn't good enough. As for Artur Kashenko moving forward, they haven't gotten that full glory card done in Amsterdam. I'd love it if he got on that card. I do believe he's still a top, a high-level welterweight. I would love to see him fight anybody in the top 10. I think it's an awesome fight. I think that he beats a Stetsarenko. He really has that ability. I think that he beats a Paul Daly. Like, I want to see him fight these guys, so I'm hoping that they use him more. His body's completely different now. He's no longer that guy who struggled to make weight and fight at, 154 pounds, which was the K1 limit. He's not that guy anymore. He's a stronger guy. His frame is different. He's a big guy. He throws good, strong hands. He's learned from everywhere that he's gone, and he's a really good combination low kick guy. Strong hand combinations that he got from Mike's gym has followed him, and his kickboxing flow is pretty solid here, so I'd like to see him fight those elite-level guys. Doesn't matter. I want to see him do it. Next fight I want to see in the card, or next one I'm going to talk about, is Albert Kraus fought this past weekend as well. Albert Kraus, he gets a victory over Marius Tita, M-A-R-I-U-S-T-I-T-A, and then Albert Kraus's, you better know Albert Kraus. I'm not spelling Albert Kraus for you because you better know who that is. Albert Kraus comes out and has a performance. He's older, 35 years old, doesn't move as fast, doesn't move as quick. He's going against a guy who's 37, 38 himself. But, old guy versus old guy, no shame there. I'm not going to yell at you until you have to fight someone young if you're that age. He had a vintage performance. He'd always been able to throw in boxing flurries in his prime, but he threw low kicks sporadically, and he really only focused on low kicks when he had a stronger boxing guy in front of him. And I thought this time he was just a combination low kick machine from jump, and he really scored a big time shot to the body of Tita at the end of the first round. And Tita, if you listen to the sound, you don't even have to turn it up. You hear him physically groan from some of the shots that he took. He took a bad body shot, got out of that round. Round two starts, and then you've got the Thai gentleman's name eludes me right now in the moment. Nope, I'm going to go ahead and go to my notes so that I can give you guys the exact name. You've got a situation like I was talking about with Thep Nhat, where they use the they attack the back leg. The only difference was Thep Nhat used his rear power left leg to attack the back leg. Albert Kraus used his lead leg to attack the back leg, and he really did a good job of having him hurt, scored it down with it in the round. They went to the third round where he scored both a body shot down and a low kick down. It was just a murder scene, but somehow, thanks to Albert Kraus trying some jumping spinning kick, he wasn't able to get the stoppage. 3 rounds of destruction by Albert Kraus. He's not going to be an elite fighter anymore. He's not going to be a guy who can compete with the best in the world. He just doesn't have the fast twitch muscles. He doesn't have the chin. He doesn't have the body. But can he put on an entertaining fight? Can he go out there and perform well against a lot of guys? Is there money for him to be made? You know what a great fight would be for that glory card if they wanted to use? Gago Drago versus Albert Krauss would be an absolutely fantastic fight to make. The first time they did it in the tournament. Gago Drago scored the step-up knee that scored the down on Krauss. That got him up on the card. That was the decider for that one. But, man, at this time in their careers, that's the fight to make. So, whatever promoter you are, that's the one. That one's on the house for me. Go ahead and add that to you. I mean, even next year, they've already got the – they're talking about the World Fight League, which is the last card I'm going to break down. Man, that'd be a fun fight to add to that card. So, older Albert Krauss still can deliver. Also, Jannata Diniz is a guy who's been on its Showtime cards. It's been on, you know, K1 undercards, Glory. He's never been known as your elite fighter to be following. But he's still got some good skill. I think he is with Hammer's Gym full-time now. And he may have always been. But Jannata Diniz is going to get one of the crazier KOs. Because basically he gets a fight with Valentin Slavikowski. And before I get into Valentin Slavikowski's fight, Valentin Slavikowski is trained by Dmitry Shikuta. When I heard that, when they said trainer Dmitry Shikuta, I almost cried because it just shows me how old I am. Dmitry Shikuta was, I'm telling you, one of the best fighters in the world. And when Super Combat was the it league for guys between who weighed more than the K1 limit and were less than the heavyweight limit, when that was the league, he was the guy. I mean, and he beat Yuri Mess, and he beat everybody. He had a great run until, of course, he ran into Tyrone Spong. No shame in losing to the greatest, probably the greatest 77kg fighter ever. But, man, it's what a fantastic thing to see that he's older and you know, training people now, and it made me feel a million years old. But going to the fight, Jannata Diniz, basically he throws a cross hook at the same time that Valentin Slavikowski is throwing a switch kick. So the right hand gets in some, but as he's tipping, the left hook scores clean and he is gone. It's one of the crazier KOs. When I do my highlight for the year, I'll probably have that KO in there because it's some sweet stuff. Like Slavikowski is just, I mean, left hook while the foot's still in the air and the switch kick, he's just absolutely gone. Big time score. Good stuff by Jannata Diniz. And in general, you know, I think even if you don't have the ability to still, you know, recapture the greatness of, you know, of if you never had the ability to fight the highest level, if you never got to walk out during a K1 event, if you never got to hear that crowd cheer for you, if you never got to be part of that huge It's Showtime card, it doesn't mean you can't have a good career. It doesn't mean that everything you did was for naught. And when I looked at how this card was put together, the promotion is called ACB, Absolute Championship in Burkett. It took place in Romania. And when I looked at this card and I looked at it, and it was a full card, and I could break down more of the fights. For example, there were some prospects that, you know, Hensley Bakuri gets a victory over Warren Sievelman. Sievelman's my guy, so that one broke my heart. But he scored two downs with the hands. He caught Sievelman's, in the middle of exchange, and then he scored another down to get that KO in that first round. Another prospect that's, you know, kind of up-and-coming guy that I just wanted to mention, and I've talked about him at least once before. I can't remember the card that I used him on. Now that's kind of racking my brain right now. But what is it? Oh, I'm going off the top of my head, you guys. Please forgive me for the slight hesitation. I believe I'm trying to remember his first name. His last name is Boya. Sorry, it's just going to drive me crazy if my mind doesn't remember who this fighter is. Actually, you know what? I know why I couldn't remember his name, because he wasn't on this card. He fought on KOK, and that's Chris Baya. Chris Baya was the guy who I was thinking from Mike's Gym, was a young prospect. But anyways, as far as the card that I was just referring to, the Romanian card, it had a lot of good prospects on it. So definitely go to liverkick.com, and I believe it might be up. You go to results, there's a link to watch the entire event, and you can go ahead and ride it out. And there's some prospects, some guys to pay attention to down the road. Jamie Bates from the United Kingdom fought on it. You know, there's some names that you really want to just see what they become down the road. Go ahead and break that card down. Should be interesting for sure. Going to go ahead and go to one more fight card. I'm going to wrap it up with probably the biggest fight card of this past weekend in terms of, you know, high-level Dutch talent, international talent, the second installment of the Melvin Manhoff World Fighting League took place, and it's crazy because after this one, they've already set up the next one for April of next year, where they got Mooney Kamal against Andy Sauer. That's gonna be a lot of fun, but. Let's go ahead and break this down. We'll go ahead and go from the top. Muhammad Kamal gets a KO victory over Shahid Al-Haj. He was able to score down. Shahid got up, all heart, started to throw back, looked to exchange, and then a left hook came over the top. I think it was a right hook. Landed high on the temple, and then Shahid was out. He fell on his back, and his head was like resting on the lower rope, and he's like looking up at, you know, pretty much at nowhere because it was such a devastating shot, and that called it. Mooney Kamal, I remember when he retired, he was so young, and I was like, dude, this guy is so talented. He could be one of the best fighters in the world at 70 kgs. I was glad to hear that he had come back. He's fought a few times since the return. I just want him to fight consistently. And I'm not sure how much he wants to do this, but if there's a big organization, Glory could use a Mooney Kamal because he's going to bring all action. Mooney Kamal, I mean, for those, Robin Van Roosmalen is your Glory champion. Mooney Kamal beat him. So I think it's really important that people know just how talented this guy is, and he's not old. He is not an old guy. So there's plenty of time if he wanted to make a run at things. He's very, very talented. I really like him a lot, and I'm glad that he got a victory here. Shahid Al-Haj El-Haj coming back. Still, he will be immortalized in the history of kickboxing because of the fight with Mike Zambides. I want to see him fight a little bit more on a regular basis. He may not be what he was supposed to be. There's a good chance that day is done for him. Like, he is a different fighter from here on out. But he can still be an effective fighter, and he's still going to be a good guy who can move some fighters. And most importantly, if you've got an up-and-comer, that's the guy to match him with. It really is. You want to see who your guy is. You want to see how good your guy can be. You want to see he's a good gatekeeper-esque role, and I want to see him compete down the road for sure. Next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and break down some of these tournaments. I'll go ahead and break them down from the beginning. We'll start with the 70 kg tournament. Saro Glunder defeats William Deender, and Cedric Manhoff defeats Edson Fortes. Here's my thing with Saro Glunder. I like how active he is. He's fighting the way you're supposed to fight when you're an up-and-coming fighter. This is a guy who had a victory over Masaki Nori this year, and now he just fought Sanchai a couple weeks ago, and you know he is now fighting William Deender, gets a victory here. He's in a tournament. He's doing it, you know, and he's fighting the most, you know, he's probably had one of the tougher resumes as far as who he's fought in a year. Go ahead and add to it that he, you know, Philip Manuru, like, he's fighting everybody there is to fight. And he moved up to 70 kgs when he's really very, very suited for 65 kgs. I love his activity. I love that he's out there testing himself. William Deener, of course, we all know, is a gatekeeper to the stars. If you beat William Deener, you know you belong in the elite. You know you at least belong in the conversation for fighting in Glory. Even at this stage in his career, doesn't have the KO pop anymore. He's still a very entertaining, very tough fighter. He gets the victory there for Saro Glunder. Cedric Manhoff gets a victory over Edson Fortes, and he's slowly starting to break himself out of his brother's shadow. And that will, of course, always be tough because his brother had such a stellar career and just an awesome fight resume, win, lose, or draw. But Cedric Manhoff, who started to make his name, fought in a K-1 super fight back when K-1 had their last kind of big tournament there in Greece. And then he fought a lot on the fight cards for Super Combat, and his victory over Edson Fortes, and then his eventual victory over the Glunder in the tournament final. That's how you do it. That's how you move a career. Cedric Manhoff, 70 kgs. I want to see him fight anybody in Glory. Him versus Shahid's a good next fight. You know, that's a good moving fight for this period of time in their lives. Him versus anybody in Glory in the outstretch. Kyle Hollenbeck, I like to see that. Cedric Manhoff, great tournament win. Career's on the move. Career's on the way up. I want to see more of this guy competing. Next tournament I'm going to talk about is the women's tournament. We got Orenta Vrendezi. She gets a victory over Sarah DeBabe. DeBabe, of course, has had a lot of momentum, really doing good things. And I was a little, I won't say it's upset, but I thought that Sarah was going to get the victory there. Yona Wymans defeats Selesia Van Dibas. And Yona Wymans then goes on to beat Orenta for the tournament victory. Yona Wymans is one of the best fighters in the world, and she's been in some close battles that didn't go her way, and the tough one with Denise Kielholtz did go her way in terms of getting the decision right after the fight was over with. Not to mention, if they call that down a 10-8 like they should have in the fifth, she would have been clear. The victory would have been in her favor, clear. But when they didn't call it a down, the protests had her lose the Infusion title. Pretty much, you know, that what the judges did, what the fight didn't. You know, like they, or excuse me, the committee did what the judges didn't. They went ahead and overchanged the decision, and they went in behavior, or they went in favor of Denise Akilholtz, who lost on that day. So disappointing that it went down that way for sure. I'm sure Ilona Wymans, who also was in a really close fight with who at the time we're talking a, I'm thinking that Van Gestel was 19 years old when they fought. You know, it's she's had some really great battles and some tough losses, but Ilona Wymans is still one of the best female fighters in the world. She's a top 10 female fighter in the world, and she gets this tournament victory here, so congrats to her. Next tournament I'm going to break down is we're going to go to head to the 95kg tournament. We got Lorenzo Javier Jorge. He defeats Ridion Caro, and that's definitely an upset. I thought for sure Caro wasn't just going to win this fight, but was going to win this tournament. And Caro was upset. If you look at, there's a video that kind of has a breakdown of, like, you know, short interviews, and, you know, you can see kind of like behind the scenes at the fight event, and they're like out in the crowd and they're doing a lot of interviews. Shout out to Daria Albers, who's out there getting interviews in. And when I saw this, you know, kind of result, and I saw Caro get the mic, and he said, "Hey, I thought I won these rounds. I could understand Jorge winning this. This was not the right decision. That kind of deal, whatever." Shout out to Javier Jorge getting a victory, you know, and, you know, he's from Spain, and he's getting a victory here in Holland. So shout out to him. He gets the victory. He moves forward. Luis Tavares gets a victory over Fred Sicking. Fred Sicking had been doing a good job of posting things online. He'd been at the Black Zillions. He'd been training hard for this. Luis Tavares, too strong, too powerful. Then Tavares wins an extra round decision over Javier Jorge. And, I mean, I just think that we need more guys like this. So Luis Tavares, fighting the heavyweight division glory, I need to see it. I need to see more athletes. I need to see more people move forward. And more big names kind of emerge to be in that heavyweight division. Because right now we feel like we got Benjamin Adebuyi versus, you know, Rico Verhoeven, and we don't know what's behind it, because Errol Zimmerman, Nick thinks his leg injury, wants to focus on boxing, and Gita, who finally kind of emerged out of nowhere just recently, just to talk about how he doesn't like Rico, and he didn't like that, he didn't think Rico was a real champion. It was a really weird moment for that to get posted, but I like the idea of Gita talking, you know, a little bit of, doesn't necessarily have to be trash, but talk about his difficulties with Rico Verhoeven and judges' decisions, because that means that he could return to kickboxing, because he's awesome, and I want to see him on that Amsterdam Glory card. But getting back to this card, I want Luis Tavares to compete with the best. So Luis Tavares, go against Daniel Gita, I'll take it, you know, but we need more of it. We need more elite athletes competing at a high level. We need more people to emerge and at least try to become that elite athlete. They got to see. They got to test themselves. Tavares winning this tournament was good. Let's see him moving forward. And, of course, at 95 kgs, he can easily probably make the 93 kgs for glory. And, of course, that brings Daniel Younga and, you know, Artem Fakhadov and, you know, Salah Kalavari. It brings a plethora of options for him and everybody else in this 95 kg tournament. Ridion Caro fighting in glory at 93 kgs would be awesome. Also, we have Super Fights. Ibrahim El Bouni gets a victory over Bogdan Stoica. I heard knee injury from one person. I heard foot injury from another person. No matter what it is, it's unfortunate. Definitely don't want an injury to end anything. And I don't want Bogdan Stoica's career slowed by something like this. I thought that he was scheduled to fight in a glory fight. Off the top of my head, I forget it. No need to correct me on that one. I'll get it next week. But Bogdan Stoica, he's had these kind of things pop up in his career. He struggled against some of the step-up bouts. Things have been a little bit, you know, disappointing for him since not fighting in Super Combat. Super Combat, he can jump and knee his way to victory and do spinning stuff. But putting together consistent kickboxing is where he struggled, and I wanted to see him possibly put that together. He's been a different guy since the car accident and or since the motorcycle accident. So hopefully he heals fast and he's back at it next year. Sim Brown gets a victory over Errol Kooning and a two older guys fighting. Shout out to Sim Brown getting the victory there. There were a couple of single fights that I could bring up. No need to go through them all. I think I got the heart of the order for you guys, but it was a really big card, and I'm really, really happy that Melvin's promotion's doing well. It's the place to be. I had a lot of people following it. It's a lot of fun. I'm excited to see what comes from these guys moving forward. So thank you all for listening to my podcast. I'll be back next week. Again, I'm going to try to get an interview for you. And then also, I failed you guys in terms of I was supposed to be doing a summer series where I was breaking down the liverkick.com's elite weight classes, and I didn't do it. So now that summer series is going to be a fall series. I only did one, and then I got busy. Now I'm going to bring it back. I'll probably bring it back next week. So thank you all for listening to the podcast. Hope all is well. God bless and peace.